I have what feels like 7 or 8 jobs. Mostly, I take care of my 2-year-old daughter, Naomi. I also do early literacy consulting from time to time, and also I teach usually in the evenings. I also run a blog called brassybrown.com. It's dedicated to women of color in New Orleans. And I freelance write also sometimes for Go NOLA. So I'm all over the place, mostly because I'm trying to accommodate my 2-year-old and trying to figure out the balance between motherhood and trying to stay professional and keep my professional skills up and stay in conversation with the world. Although most days it feels like I am trying to potty train and fold clothes and all of those things.
Great. And this is your only child?
Yes.
Right? Okay. And are you from New Orleans?
I'm not from New Orleans. I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. I've been here, it feels like right since Katrina. And I say that because I met my husband at a writing conference 2 months before Katrina happened. And I didn't know he would be my husband at the time. We were just at this conference, and he said he wanted to stay in touch. And I said, yeah, okay, everybody says that. But he really did. And then next thing I know, Katrina was all over the television. I said, oh my God, I just met this guy from New Orleans. I hope he's okay. And yeah, I didn't think too much about it, but he contacted me like mid-September and said, I'm okay, and I still enjoyed meeting you, and can we be friends? And I was like, but you lost your house and all those things. So I tried to organize my friends in Cleveland to help here in Katrina. So I was kind of back and forth with that. So I feel like I've seen New Orleans and been in New Orleans since 2005. We officially married in 2008. And that's when I moved here, 2008 of October.
Wow, cool. That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
So you're not originally from New Orleans, but your daughter is in New Orleans. And
yes.
And your husband is a New Orleans.
He's actually from Mississippi. Okay. My daughter is the true original New Orleans, and she is that through and through. She has a second line umbrella over by the door, and she performed at Jazz Fest this past weekend at the kids' tent. And she loves music, and she's always dancing. And and her favorite place to go in New Orleans is Congo Square. So
you love Congo Square.
What do you do at Congo Square?
It's all right. Later on.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Later on.
So remind me, what's your daughter's name?
Naomi.
Naomi. Okay. Yeah. So you are taking care of Naomi a lot of time. Does Naomi ever go to a daycare center?
Yeah, she goes twice a week to a home daycare that was recommended to us from a friend at our church. It's been very good. It's good for her socially, but the ages range. So it's like everybody's at the daycare. So sometimes I feel that she's stuck between progressing for her age and often modeling what the younger kids are doing. And so we're kind of challenged right now trying to figure out what to do. So actually yesterday I went to check out another daycare center that's actually is more like a school. And so we're trying to think about what to do, but the costs are so expensive for daycares. For example, I have some friends that pay up to maybe $3,000 a month.
How much are you currently paying?
I'm currently paying about $325 a month.
A month. For how many days a week?
2 days a week.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Would the daycare center that you're looking at now be more expensive?
Yeah, it's $675 a month.
For 2 days a week?
For 3 days a week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And in kind of looking to, like you're mentioning, this mm-hmm. age difference.
Yeah.
The age range is something that's having you kind of look elsewhere. What else are you looking at in terms of trying to find something?
I'm trying to find a place that nourishes her culturally. As an early literacy specialist, I know that it's incredibly important to be in an environment that is cultivating as far as culture, language, appropriate responses. I say that because we were at a children's event in the city, and the children were coloring these coloring sheets. And my daughter decided to just pick up the black crayon and color black. And she was just coloring. And so another mom, a white mom, said to her child, why don't you offer your friend, referring to Naomi, another crayon? But she had a crayon. It just happened to be a black crayon. And so the child offered the crayon as his mother had told him to. And Naomi said, I color black. I have a crayon. No, you know, I'm coloring, you know. And the boy understood that, and he went on about his business coloring on his sheet. A couple of minutes later, the mom says to my daughter, honey, can I give you another color crayon? Don't you want an orange crayon or a yellow crayon? And she said, no. You know, she got annoyed. No, I color black. And so I stepped in to say, please, you know, she's coloring with this crayon. You're late. Last week she colored with orange. This week it just happens to be black. And she introduced herself to me as someone new to New Orleans from Connecticut who had worked in a parent center and all of these things. And she went on to tell me that children who color with black crayons are often aggressive and angry, and I won't say all of what I said, but the people in the room felt the tension, and it's just striking that even at that young age of 2 years old, her behavior is being critiqued, and somehow black or blackness is somehow bad or threatening or all of these stereotypes that we often see. So if she's getting that at 2 years old, what's coming down the pipe later? Also, New Orleans schools, they really concern me. And I'm just trying to figure out how do I give her the best start in New Orleans, nourish her a little bit more, and give her the confidence before I put her in environments where there's more pressure for groupthink and all of those things. So right now she's her own person, and I like that. So it's been a challenge. It's been a sacrifice. Mostly a one-income family. So that means everything, the mortgage, the gas, the groceries, the diapers, or pull-ups. Now, thank God, she's finally in. Car repairs, all of those things, flood insurance, which is sky high, comes out of one check mostly, besides my hustling that I do on the side. So I've been really, sometimes I've felt behind in the world. I look at my other friends who are women who are working, and I feel like I'm just stuck at home sometimes. And I have 2 degrees. And I've worked for a mayor in Ohio. I've used to work for American Greetings.
And do you want a job here?
I do. But I want my daughter to have the best start. And so that's the balance.
So do you feel like right now you're staying home partially because you haven't been able to find something that you feel comfortable with?
Yeah, I was offered a job let's see, probably late last year. And we did the math. And by the time we put her in a daycare, even the same daycare at full time, by the time I do gas, getting her there back and forth, we realized it would be maybe, I would maybe take home like 400 something bucks at the end of the day. And so I just felt that wasn't worth me dragging her out, you know, every day for that. When I am working as hard as I can to teach her things. We go to the park. I talk about ducks. We have a tablet. She plays all these games, matching games. She goes to Congo Square. She loves that. Her dad just got her a drum, so she's been drumming, driving me crazy. Excuse me. But she's been having a lot of fun with that. She sings in her choir at church with the other children.
And how old is she?
She's two.
Okay.
Yeah, she just, like I said, just did Jazz Fest. And so a lot of people said, well, just keep doing what you're doing, because she's really well off right now. And I'm lucky that when I do early childhood literacy programs, I do some things with the Children's Museum, I can bring her sometimes. And so the challenge is, how can I work? How can I have flexibility? How can I get valuable or equal pay for my skills and my talents without it totally interrupting her progress, interrupting the flow of life? You know, we try to eat healthy. We try to really have a very quality, we want to give her a quality of life. And I have so many friends that they start at 6:37 in the morning. They don't see their children till 5:30. By that time, it's time to come home, get dinner, put them in the bathtub, and go to bed. I don't want that kind of rigor for her, at least right now. And it's been challenging. So it's been a sacrifice for me. It's been a sacrifice for me to move here. I left. I had just gotten a great job, making the most money I'd ever had made. I was overseeing a library branch system in Ohio. So I was like overseeing four branches and working on workforce development, just cool things that I love to do. And then he proposed. And so it was great, but it was at a cost, and he wasn't willing to move his talents to Cleveland. And so I came here to New Orleans. And so it's been, I feel like I'm in my own recovery. I know that New Orleans is in its own recovery. I'm in my own rebuilding, where I'm trying to reinvent myself and discover new ways to live and manage wifehood, motherhood, all of these things, and still be creative and have fun and feel like I'm thriving. And my husband is very supportive, I have to say that. He is with the media. He works for NOLA.com. Okay. So he's often busy. And so this week particularly, his boss has been out. So Naomi and I have been really grinding it out by ourselves. And so that's challenging too. And so I think that if I were working, we would have a lot more takeout meals. We would be moving at a pace that probably wouldn't be good for any of us. Mm-hmm. So some of it is stability. My friend told me, because one day I was just feeling overwhelmed and like, maybe I should just go get a job. And, you know, other kids are in school all day and, you know, that type of thing. And my friend said to me, you know, it's a gift. It's a gift. This concept of work balance for women is, a lot of it is Western ideas. She had just gotten back from Nigeria, I believe, or Kenya. Maybe it was Kenya. And she was just talking about how mothers there take their children with them. That child is an extension of them, and it is a necessity. It is necessary to incorporate that child into everything. Aspect of their life, but here we kind of compartmentalize everything. And she said, it's a gift. Do you know how many, especially Black mothers over time, have had to work and have had to leave their children with someone? And so, and she said, this is the only time that she'll get this individualized attention. Once she's in school, if she's, the only attention she'll get one-on-one is if she's behaving poorly, or for some other reason, but take this time now and invest on the front end instead of, you know, worrying about and measuring yourself against other women or other mothers.
It's also interesting to me because you're not from here, mm-hmm. and I assume because you didn't move that long ago, you have a lot of connections and friends and family back home.
Yeah.
Are there people back home that are having kids? Like, have you been able to talk to almost like the different landscapes of daycare here and kind of hearing what options are elsewhere? You know, can you talk a little bit about, like, if someone, like you were talking about the, and she gets older, there's going to be this education system that you are a little wary of.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested, like, daycare is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what, in looking at options and now in looking again at new options, mm-hmm. how would you describe kind of the variety of types of daycare that you can choose for your child in
sure.
New Orleans?
It varies. They're very sophisticated daycares that that almost run like private schools. They're very structured, very rigorous. There's some that just play all day, you know, that's just kind of like somebody's watching the kid, making sure they're not breaking an arm or something, but nothing else meaningful. And to back up to your larger question about what are other people that I know doing, most of the people that I know have family helping them. Their mom or grandparents play a large role in childcare for most people that I know. My mother at one point was going to stay in New Orleans half a year. She's in Ohio. She's going to come for the winter months and then kind of go back. But she suffered a stroke last March. And so now she... That's Naomi, sorry. And so now she is having treatments once a month. And so that fell through for us. My husband's mother is deceased. And neither of us have family here. And so it's very challenging. And other relatives that we have, they have children. And their aunts and uncles are helping them. So it's really hard to... have a date night from time to time, or we can't just drop her off somewhere and say, can you watch her for an hour or two, as other friends and relatives that I have will drop off their child at grandma's or something like that. So it's a lot, it's much more challenging.
And like you were saying, some of these schools could seem like, some of these centers could seem like super schools, private schools.
Yeah.
This is what we, you know, we have staff at this time. Mm-hmm. And then others can be...
Yeah. And some of them are faith-based, too. So that's another thing. Do you want faith-based? Do you want rigorous curriculum? Do you want... what does the diversity population look like? The daycare I just looked at, they have... I think they had... I saw on the playground, I think they had three what seemed to be Asian children, a few white children, mostly African-American children still, but it was... It was diverse,
and so that was good. That Naomi's at now is diverse.
It's all Black. It's all African American. So that in some ways is good for me, because I want her to see people that reflect her, but I also want her to be able to navigate the world. And she gets that on the other end when we go to the library, when we go to the museum. Not when she's at daycare. Yeah. And the ones that are more diverse cost a lot more. I mean, and then there's also all of these fees. So, for example, let's say I needed to be at work at 8 o'clock. Most daycares charge a before fee. Like, let's say you've got to be at work. I forget what they call it now. But there's like a pre-fee before school starts. And then there's the aftercare fee if you can't get your child by a certain time. And then there's registration fees to even get your child enrolled. So it can be a lot. And for some, there's like uniforms that the child has to have. So it's just this range of things. Her particular daycare, we rotate as parents that we donate snacks and we donate supplies to keep the cost down. And so that's been good. And she's a really, I like her daycare teacher a lot.
What's
she's very supportive.
What's it called?
It's Seasons Daycare, as like the seasons. So,
cool.
And, yeah. And, she's really good with her, and I think she's gotten a lot of good nurturing. Like, I don't think she will be harmed there. She's nurtured there, but I do think she needs a little more of a challenge. She's starting to read a little bit, and as you can see around the house, I try to create learning stations within the house. So the refrigerator has letter magnets, and so I'll say spell such and such, and I know she can't spell it, but it's just to get her thinking about how letters work together beyond just knowing your ABCs. Because I really, when I look at New Orleans schools, I know that she's got to come into, in order to get into a good school. You know, and that's the thing, and I've talked to a lot of parents that they're willing to put the money on the front end to these really elaborate daycares in the hopes that they can get into a Lusher or international school or whatever the case may be, or to be able to test well. And my thing is, if we have a waiting list for good schools, that means we know that they're bad schools, right? If everybody's rushing to this place, we know that these over here must be really, really bad. And so why can't we all just have good schools?
Right.
So that's really a concern for me. And I know that education is really the key to everything. So I'm hoping that my instruction without a full daycare experience will supplement the daycare that she is going to, and hopefully keep her prepared going
well,
down the road.
I respect a lot. I mean, a lot of what you're saying, I have a lot of respect for. I mean, my mom, it was a different situation too, but my mom stayed at home, and I think a lot of the time, especially when I was a little bit older and wished I didn't have a mom that was home, wanted her to work more. And she was we were also in the position where she could, right? Like you're saying, not everyone can say, I want my child to have this experience and therefore my child will. Like there are parents that want their child to have exactly what you're describing and they still need to go be working and they need to have that rigid schedule. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate now the way that I was raised and the time that I did spend with my mother as opposed to other people. And I think what you're saying is so important. And if you can do it, there's so much to be said for that.
Yeah. Our initial thought was we were going to stay. I was going to stay at home with her till she was 2 years old. She'll be three in September. And people often say she's so well-rounded. She's, you know,
she seems
happy. Yeah, she seems happy.
In this interview right now, building blogs.
Yeah, she seems really happy. I mean, she knows people at Rouse's and Winn-Dixie. You know, all the
so
people.
So do I.
And,
not, I mean,
you know, I mean,
to brag about.
Yeah. By the time we get to the checkout, she's gotten cake and turkey, and you know, I turn my head, she's got a fistful of turkey from one of the ladies in the deli, and she just, you know, she comes in a place, she says hi everybody, and the biggest compliment that people give me is that she seems so happy. And I wonder if things were different, would she not be happy? I think about adults who don't want to get up and go to work every day, and I think about, do I want to put her in that grind of getting up every morning, dropping her off, slapping her in the car seat, you know, come on, we gotta go, you know, it's time, like, I gotta be we're late, you know, all of those things.
Because even then, those interactions that you have with her are different because they're rushed and they're all for some other thing as opposed to it being for the purpose of the interaction itself.
So I think about that a lot. My mom, she worked a lot of different jobs. My parents are divorced, and there was this real anxiety I had about not working as a child growing up when we had to fill out emergency contact forms. I would feel like I was going to throw up. I just had so much anxiety because my mom, I never could really say what my mom did. She cleaned up houses. She was a domestic. She cleaned up rich white people's houses. And I never knew how to articulate that on a form. And I would go with her sometimes. And I remember going into this one house and it was like beautiful chandeliers. And it was, and I kept thinking, this house isn't even dirty, you know? And that had just such a profound impact on me. And so there would be times that I would tell my husband, I feel like I need a job so that my daughter can say what I do. Like, I want her to say, my mom was a this, my mom was a that. And I realized that that was an issue for me that I didn't even realize was an issue. And I had to ask myself, am I ashamed of my mom? What is this all about that I feel like, you know, I don't know if I felt like I had to overcompensate for that. But my mom is a phenomenal mother, and she taught me a lot of different things and hard work and all of that. And I know that I am who I am today. I got my degrees because my mom did everything she could do, you know. And so for me and for my sister, my siblings. But I knew that that was – so I think part of mothering is also – that's Naomi again – how we were mothered. And my mom didn't stay at home with me. She was always gone. And so here I am. Sometimes I feel not worthy of being able to stay at home sometimes, if that makes sense, because I only have one child, you know, and I know people that are really struggling, juggling multiple children. And I feel like maybe I should just go get a job because I need to just go get a job, you know, but that's Naomi again with the blocks. But I feel like some days I do really work hard. I'm working on curriculum. I teach sometimes. And teaching this child is, and any child, is really difficult.
That's my mom. That's
and the managing of it, my days are never the same. Like I tell my husband sometimes, I wish I could just go somewhere and not be interrupted. But, you know, even the days that she goes to school, okay, she's there by 9. I got to go get her by 3. Sometimes I want to just rest, but I feel like I got to get something done because I got to go get her, you know. So by the time it's time to go get her, it starts all over again. And in between that, people are sending me projects to do, or I need to edit something, or I need to. And so my husband's been trying to tell me to just make sure that you take some time for yourself in that little bit of time that you have while she's at school. But usually I don't. I'm usually grinding out something.